Well, after a little mini break, the Total Rugby League show returns to talk about all the latest goings on from the world of rugby league. And joining me this week, we're joined by Mr. Martin Sadler, Matthew Shaw, and by Alex Davis. So, hello everybody, and welcome to a brand new series, I suppose, of the Total Rugby League show. So, as well as the usual rugby league chatter, we're also going to be talking to Beverley Rugby League Club about the great work that they've been doing for their community in recent weeks with the East Riding Food Bank. So, Chairman Ian Pollard will be joining us shortly. But there's only one place we could start. So, without further ado, let's go to our panel. Matthew Shaw, Alex Davis and Martin Sadler join us now down the other end of the line. And welcome, gentlemen. And let's start with a general catch-up, because it's been... what, 3 months since we last got together? Just Martin, we'll start with you. How's your lockdown been?
Well, it's been really weird, but not too bad, actually, you know, because I've been coming into the office quite a bit to get the paper out, and everybody else has been working from home. So it's amazing when you're working alone in an office, Ben, how much work you can actually get done without people, you know, bantering all around you. So it's not been too bad, really. But I must admit, I don't envy everybody else who's been at home all the time, because I don't know about you, but being home constantly would be a bit of a drag for me, I'm afraid.
I found it quite easy being at home. Now that I've got a little desk anyway, which I've got, I actually find that I end up doing more work than I do when I'm at work. Alex is such a distraction. That's what
I knew it'd be my fault.
We can probably stay home forever then, Matthew.
Well, if you're giving me permission, it's saving me a lot of money on petrol. adds up all the 3 months.
But we're all back now, and we're back because there's a little glimmer of light in the distance where we could see, could rugby league in the Northern Hemisphere be returning? We are still obviously waiting on how the remainder of the 2020 season looks and if it can continue or all that kind of thing. The NRL is back underway, Alex, and later we're going to be talking about round 5 and looking ahead to round 6. So excited am I about this show returning that I got my Now TV subscription back just to watch NRL last weekend. So
it's the only reason I have it.
But hopefully Super League might be returning to Sky Sports at some point, but Martin, how does that restart look? Should there be a restart? Can it restart?
Well, the conventional wisdom now seems to be that it will restart in August. The first couple of weeks in August will be a period of catch-up for the clubs that had games postponed for various reasons. I mean, the Catalans are 3 games behind most of the other clubs. They've only played 4. The other clubs have played 7. So they'll need a bit of catching up to do. Those games will all be behind closed doors. The regular fixtures will recommence in mid-August. I think it's the 14th, Matthew, if I remember rightly, the actual date that we're anticipating for that. And, of course, the possibility is that they'll play behind closed doors at least until the end of September. Crowds might come back again in October. That's how it looks at the moment. But nobody can be absolutely sure of it, can we? You know, until we hear more information from the government about what will and will not be allowed. But the other point is that, of course, we're going to possibly have the new rules in. The 6-again rule that's featured in the NRL, possibly doing away with scrums, which would be an incredibly radical move and, in my view, not a very wise one. But certainly the RFL Rules Committee has discussed that possibility. So, you know, a lot to think about. And Alex is the expert on the NRL and how the 6-again rule has worked. So, you know, over to you, Alex. What do you make of that?
Well, I've certainly enjoyed the 6-again rule. Whether we should have it in Super League is a different question. But it certainly had the desired effect from their point of view. It's made the game quicker and it's much more exciting. But it has changed the game probably in a way that no other rule change has done for a long time, to be honest.
It did lead it at first in round 3 to some one-sided scorelines, didn't it?
Yeah. I think the gap between the top and the bottom is perhaps the teams that are just using that better. And I think it really highlights players who have skill rather than players who have bulk.
Which we want to see.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why we've seen the Roosters play particularly well since the lockdown. It's James Tedesco and Jake Friend in particular is using that really well for the Roosters.
I think the Roosters are possibly the best team I've seen for many, many years.
On Monday, they were phenomenal against the Bulldogs. I didn't think the Bulldogs were that bad, but they still put 40 past them.
I will come back to the NRL shortly, but Matthew, I was just going to say, I mean, Marty touched upon the general thinking when we're going to be returning. In the paper this week, you've said a January grand final is off the cards. They do have to squeeze in a lot of fixtures here to make sure that we finish this side of Christmas.
They do, but the proposals for the November grand final and the December grand final don't quite feature as many games, do they? So it's slightly easier. There's more midweek games if we play through to November rather than December or January. However, it's not a majority. No, there are more in favour of option one than any other of the contract situation. If you roll on to December, the contracts are limited to you. That leaves you a bit of a problem. So that's the main reason. And there is the idea that they don't want to compromise the year after too much, probably compromise England's chance of winning the World Cup. Some would argue, I certainly would argue, that purely by having a grand final scheduled for 2.5 weeks or 2 weeks before England's first game, you're compromising England's chance of winning the Cup anyway. You're not compromising it any worse, I suppose, is the point they're making.
And logistically, Martin, also in the paper, they're talking about this is all right in theory, but this situation changes week by week, day by day. And one of the things that's been talked about is just how much testing kits are going to cost, because obviously football's come back, but football comes with a heavy amount of testing capability there for that particular sport. I mean, in the paper, it's got the figure of $5,000 per week per club. That's quite a lot of money.
Well, it's a particularly lot of money for the smaller clubs. You know, if the clubs outside Super League are thinking about coming back again, to have a £5,000 bill before they've kicked a ball or before anybody's walked through the gate is going to be prohibitive, in my view. And even for Super League clubs, you know, they're not going to have any gate income. They're obviously going to retain the Sky money for the rest of the year, but it's still going to be a financial challenge for them. And I think, you know, with a bit of luck, we're going to be focusing on that in League Express next Monday. But I certainly, you know, don't think it's smooth going. And I think the clubs are really going to struggle over this next few months. And once we start getting into a situation where they're playing more than once a week, that cost of testing might even go up, because of course you might be getting tested before every game. So, you know, it might then be 10,000 a week or whatever, depending on how the process is created. So I think there are a lot of unanswered questions so far.
The plus point that of how the clubs are seeing it at the minute is every time they get a quote, the quotes are coming down rather than up. And I'm assuming, but I am assuming, and not saying this for a fact, that it's because there are more businesses that are being able to provide this, and therefore they are all in competing in the same market, and the prices are falling. So yeah, you're right. If there are midweek games, I would assume that they have to get tested after that weekend game, and then before the midweek one. But it's certainly better. The situation is better now on the testing front than it was about 4 weeks ago, where clubs were fought the prices. I mean, it's news that's been well received, really, given the circumstances, by clubs, rather than moaning and groaning.
I mean, Alex. Mm. I mean, Alex, if you look at the NRL, it looks like such a well-oiled machine, and it just seems to have worked. What they've done in the last month or so. But it's been such an undertaking. They have made it look easy, but there's a lot of logistics that's gone into getting that particular competition up and running again.
Oh, well, absolutely. Project Apollo was a massive job, and Peter Volandis did a great job. I didn't think really that they stood much of a chance, but we have to remember that their situation is vastly different to ours. The amount of cases in the UK, the amount of cases still going on in the UK, is so different to what's going on in Australia. So I think, to be honest, our challenge is a lot greater than theirs to get it back up and running. Even if we are looking at August, they are in a much better position at the moment to get things going, but they're still having scares every now and again. So it was Brodie Croft that tested, didn't test positive. He tested for a temperature a couple of times, and then eventually passed. They were allowed into the stadium, and then they had a scare at the weekend with surrounding Aidan Tolman, and they worked really, really well there. They came to a quick decision, postponed the game until the day after, and then played the game, and it worked really well. So they are doing a good job, but our circumstances are very different, and we need to remember that.
I wouldn't be very comfortable as a player over here with what they are saying, to be honest. The whole scrums debate, they're saying, you know, it reduces the risk. Well, what do you mean reducing the risk? Surely if they're playing, they're safe to play.
Exactly. I think if they're thinking of getting rid of the scrum, then it's not safe to be playing at all.
No, I agree with that. Yeah.
I just think if they're safe, they're safe. And if they're not safe, they're not safe. Yeah. You know, for me, they say that by getting in a scrum, it's the equivalent of 132 tackles. But you're still tackling each other every 5 seconds for 80 minutes.
Over 80 minutes.
You know, I won't be comfortable with it. And the whole, you're getting tested on a Wednesday before a weekend game. Well, anything can happen between Wednesday and Sunday, as an example. Mm. With the NRL, you get tested as you go into the ground. So you have the peace of mind.
Well, Matthew, that's the point.
Of course.
Surrounded by your teammates and officials.
Yeah, and when you're there and you're tested and even they're all clear, you have that peace of mind knowing into the ground that everyone in there is safe.
I think we've just got to hope for that when August comes around that we'll be in a lot better position than we are at the moment. Because at the moment, I know football is beginning today on the Wednesday, but I don't believe it should be. And I think we are right in pushing it back to August and possibly even pushing it back further if we're not ready.
I'd have no issue if it was the same sort of testing procedures as the NRL. Because I think theirs is spot on. I just think, you know, and you would hope, as you say, in another 2 months, it's about 2 months. In fact, we'd be back. You'd hope we're in a better position and that would suffice. Mm. But I don't know. If I was a player, well, let's say this. I would be very surprised if there are some players out there that refuse to play if the testing is like that.
Well, that's from a Super League perspective. There's obviously another angle as well with regards to Championship and even League One. I mean, you've been covering, Matthew, in the paper, Derek Beaumont, because obviously he's keen to get Championship back up and running again. But if we're talking about this from a Super League perspective, Championship, where you've got some clubs who are full-time, but you've got a lot of clubs who are part-time, who've got players who've got day jobs as well as their rugby league commitments. I mean, it's a particular minefield for Championship as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, just going off the point we're making there, so Super League players, as we're saying, would they be comfortable getting tested on a Wednesday and then playing against players they don't know where they've been, they don't know what... Then you've in Championship, if they do the same, he's part-time guy, they're going to work, you know, and out all sorts of places. They could be teacher, they could be anything. So logistically, I'm not convinced how it can work. I think this has been an interesting story. I think what's probably got the backs up of Derek and Mark Campbell at Featherston is the attitude of other clubs in that they've given up hope, they don't want to play. That's the reality. They don't want to play. And what's not being said and should be said is that, let's look this way. So you've got a part-time club, all the staff are on furlough, they've no overheads because they don't own the ground, you know, they just rent places, might rent training facilities. There's none of that to worry about. But the Skyman is still coming in. Do the maths, these clubs are making money at the minute. So of course they aren't going to want to bring the staff off furlough, play behind closed doors and not have anyone to make the revenue up. Of course they don't want to play.
I mean, if they
that's not right, really, is it?
No, but just if I was to play devil's advocate for a second, some would have bar and event revenue which wouldn't be coming in at this stage, and we should also say that you know, we've just had this discussion here where we're saying at this given time, you know, Alex said, if he was a footballer, he wouldn't be playing football tonight. It's a difficult situation and a balancing act.
I get that. I get that.
The thing about the Championship clubs, though, Ben, is that, I mean, I wrote a piece a few weeks ago saying that those clubs that do want to carry on playing should be able to. You know, those clubs would likely to be those that think they could get promotion. And why not, even if they're only about half a dozen of them, let them carry on with the winner getting promotion.
Well, Matthew, there was an interesting development, was it last week, with Derek, with the idea that maybe the four or five clubs who do want to carry on should just crack on in the Super League system just for this season and just see how they get on.
Yeah, I'm not entirely convinced that Super League are down with that idea, to be fair.
No, I don't think they would have.
I mean, that's leverage, isn't it? That's kind of saying, well, we want to carry on. So,
I have complete sympathy for all the clubs that want to play in the Championship, particularly those that want promotion. And for what it's worth, I'm sure we'll come on to it, and I'll put my stall out now. I don't think there should be relegation from Super League. The reality is there are already too many financial fragilities and financial uncertainties for clubs to cope with at the minute. They don't need another one in relegation to ponder. You know, the goal, and this was set out at the start of all of this, we have to make sure every club comes with this intact. By getting rid of relegation, you help that. However, I do think there should be promotion. How can you let clubs assemble a squad, put a lot of money into it, and then tell them, actually, you can't get promoted? If they can get back on the field, they should be given that opportunity. The question is whether they can get back on the field. And I would say that it's highly unlikely that they can do it. Maybe they could get two or three clubs who are willing to chuck the money about. That doesn't count as being significant for me. That's where I stand with it.
The other alternative, Matt, is if the Championship clubs as a whole don't want to play again this year, which I think, as you've sort of implied, a majority probably don't, then really the best thing to do might be to simply hold over the season and pick it up where it left off next year, next February or March or sometime, so that the clubs that have played games already this season retain those points. And then just, you know, so that, it, you know, whichever club, I mean, Toulouse are actually at the top of the league, aren't they, at the moment, in the Championship, they would retain all those results and just carry on the fixture list next year when the competition is in front of crowds.
The issue with that, though, is it's I get the point you're making, but the argument, that isn't what Derek, Mark, whoever else, they want promotion now, and doesn't resolve that issue. That's the problem.
I don't think they're going to get it, Matt. That's the trouble.
No, I don't. What is interesting, and this is something that hasn't been discussed, but I can see causing an almighty uproar. The question will come when, and I'm saying when, not if, when the Championship is null and void. The question will be, how do they sort out the Sky money the year after? Because at the minute, a lot of it, it's not as drastic as it was before. So a certain amount of money depending on your league position. So how do you do it? And I'll tell you what will happen. You can see it coming a mile off. The clubs at the bottom of the Championship will all say, well, it should be spread evenly. We should spread it evenly. And your clubs at the top will be going, eh? Why are we spreading it evenly? It should be where it's going to cause an almighty argument. It'll be the Championship's very own civil war. And you can see it coming a million miles.
Would you just be able to go off how they finished last year? Obviously, with the differences in promotion.
Well, then what'll happen? You'll get a club. So let me think off the top of my head. Dewsbury, who finished 10th last year.
They were going to have a much better year this
year. Well, hang on. You know, so it's not been brought up yet, and I don't know the answer, but I'm telling you, that will be dominating the headlines.
All that said, Alex, I mean, Chris Hamilton from Oldham, he's in the paper this week saying there's no rush, and there genuinely isn't, because, you know, from what I could gather, if the season was to continue, League One clubs would have about 8 games left, Championship 9 games left. I mean, it's not insurmountable to squeeze those in. So there isn't a rush, is there?
It isn't. And the key thing is health and safety. I think if we get it going again, and then suddenly we have to stop in two or three weeks' time because there's a massive spike in cases, then we're back to square one again. So really, the key is starting at the right time when it's safe to do so. And if that means having to squeeze a few more games in midweek, then so be it. Rather that than have to stop the season again.
Well, we'll wait and see. I mean, Martin, like you say, League Express on Monday, what's going to be in the paper covering all these debates and discussions that we've covered off here?
Everything. I mean, you ought to ask Matthew that because Matthew's our main news reporter. But I think since the lockdown occurred, a lot of people said to me, actually, Ben, that how on earth can you possibly keep going, keep publishing, because there won't be anything to write about. Well, my God, there's been thousands of things to write about. And, you know, every week it's been a case of what to leave out rather than what to put in. So, you know, it's been a really interesting time and a strange one. But, you know, the argument, you can trust Rugby League always to have a whole load of arguments going backwards and forwards. You know, it's a game that seems to be almost more political than politics sometimes to me. And, you know, we've not been short of stories.
All that said, Matthew, I mean, on this show, we're going to be covering off Beverley Braves and their work with food banks. I've been doing Championship Weekly in the League One show throughout this, two shows a week. I've not had any problem covering all the community work that the clubs are doing, not just in Championship and League One, but in those counties with those clubs in as well. I mean, there's been so much cracking work being done.
Yeah, you're right. It's Martin's right too. It's not been anywhere near as difficult to fill the paper as I thought it would be. Because, you know, the clubs, to their credit, you know, a lot of staff have been furloughed, but the guys that aren't have been doing a lot of work pretty much game-wide. So fair play to them. As you say, a lot of good community stuff's been going on. And clubs are ticking over. We've seen a bit of recruitment go on. Then, I mean, politics, I have to laugh. That line, what did they all keep telling us at the start of this pandemic? We will all work together. We're all in this together. I've never heard a bigger lie in my entire life.
Oh, I don't know.
I have never seen more self-interest during a period of time during this.
I don't know. I think there was about a 2-week period where it was really like one voice kind of thing. The sport was with the RFL, with Ralph Rimmer,
Ben,
and that. It was
Ben the
for 2 weeks.
The season was officially the season was officially locked down, and within a week you had two or three clubs already going public saying, well, there can't be relegation.
Yeah.
And you know what? Should we be surprised that the sport's riddled in self-interest? No, we shouldn't, because I think nearly every sport is. Look at the football and the football league's argument. It's exactly the same, I get that. But what irks me, without trying to sound cynical and bitter and twisted, is the fact that they lie to us and tell us that it's all one united front, and they give out this PR rubbish. That it, you know, the Super League salary cap. Oh, wait, we unanimously agreed that the salary cap should stay. No, you didn't. That's a lie. All the six of the clubs had publicly said time and time again they wanted it reduced.
There's nothing wrong with lobbying in public. Anyway,
One of the things though that's worth remarking on again is this difference between what's happened in Australia and what's happened here. And what you find here is that, you know, the RFL and the Super League organisation, they bow to the clubs all the time. They only seem to be prepared to do what the clubs tell them to do, which makes the whole administration of the game incredibly unwieldy and untidy and sometimes almost conflicting. Whereas in Australia, you've had Peter Vlandis, who has taken charge of the game and driven it forward, and has more or less just told the clubs, this is what we're doing, this is what you're going to do, this is how we're going to organise it. And he's got them back on board and back playing, and he's done a great job in my view. And one prediction I will make about him is that when sport eventually gets back to normal around the world, Peter Vlandis will be a leading contender for a lot of leading sports chief executive jobs, because I think everybody in the world has noticed the job he's done in Australia. And, you know, next time the CEO of the Premier League comes up for appointment, he'll be a candidate potentially.
Well, politics aside, as I was saying, the number of good news stories that we've been hearing up and down the country, not just in the pro game, but also from the community game as well. And that takes us to our next topic, and that's to Beverley Rugby League Club. And this past week, in Phil Hodgson's community section of the paper, he mentions the great work that's been done by National Conference League side Beverley in regards to the East Riding's food bank. And for more on this, on Wednesday afternoon, I caught up with one of the chairmen at the club. Here's Ian Pollard.
I was with the chairman of the junior section, Neil, and we put our heads together and we thought, what can we do to give back to the community that's not going to cost us anything? Because obviously money's tight for us at the moment, but we wanted to give something back and highlight what a community club we're about, really. So we came up with the idea that we would get all our members to either bring something for the food bank or donate a little bit of money, and it went from there, really.
And what's been the reaction from the food bank to the generosity from the club?
The food bank were overwhelmed by the amount of support we got. The local Morrisons, they gave us a trolley full. Between our members, we managed to collect 6 pallets worth of food. That was some with money that was donated. We went out and did some shopping, and it went from there, really. But they was totally overwhelmed. We got everything that they wanted to restock. They was telling us that at this time, they're normally used to dealing with like 50 families a week, and they're up to like 150, between 150 and 200 families a week that they're actually helping.
And I'm sad to say this, that I've heard that story said so many times, because Beverley's one of many rugby league clubs who've helped out in their community, and it's such vitally, vitally important work that's being done here, not just by the rugby league club, but by the food bank more generally.
Without a doubt, they're helping people get a belly full of food. Without them, some people would go without food. So we just thought, what could we do to help them situations? We didn't have any money to give out, but we just brought everybody together, and it enabled us to see some of the kids again, just drop it as they're dropping things off for us, and the adults. So it worked really well for us, to be fair.
And that's the other side to this as well. I mean, it's brought the club together, hasn't it? Because obviously there'll be players, especially the kids as well, because they've basically had their season taken from them, haven't they? So, I mean, it is a case of, you know, bringing everyone together as part of the club.
Yeah, so, I mean, at the moment, what we've been trying to do is we've been trying to keep all the kids engaged, as well as the adults. We've been doing a lot of Zoom sessions and fitness sessions, and I know through the junior section they've been doing that. But it was just nice to give them a focus and give them something to believe in and, you know, bring it to, you know.
Just to talk about the club more generally, I mean, the open age section in the National Conference League, but so many youth and junior players as well. I mean, how many players ordinarily, when we're out of lockdown, will be playing under the Beverley umbrella?
Yeah, so in the open age section, we're in NCL Division 2. We was quietly confident this year of having a right dig promotion. We entered the league not last year, year before in Division 3, and we won that a canter, really. And last season, we had a bit of a consolidation, and this season was quite confident of being up there. So in the adult section, we've probably got 60 signed on over 2 teams, the first team and the Academy A team. And then with the junior section, we've got about 165 kids over 10 teams. We just got our first time we've got an 18s this year, which would have been fantastic. They haven't managed to play a game yet. But yeah, things, we've been really, really positive at the moment with Beverley, which is really good.
I was going to add as well, I mean, it's been quite a rise over recent years. I mean, you were talking about, you know, your hopes for this season, perhaps another promotion in the offing. But it has been quite a rise for the club over recent years.
Yeah, I think that's testament to a lot of the hard work that's gone in, not from the players, from the coaching staff to people that have been before in the committee. Same with the junior section. We've gone from strength, from numbers. You know, it's testament to the hard work that's been put in. This year we've just opened a clubhouse for the junior section, with purpose-built changing rooms, etc. We just had two new pitches, which have been fantastic. We've only managed to play one competitive game in the National Cup down there. I forgot to mention the open age, they're in the semi-final of the National Cup as well. So it's, yeah, the club's gone leaps and bounds over the last few years.
And I suppose that the question has to be asked, unfortunately we are where we are with the season at the moment, but you know, what is the vision now for Beverley? Because, you know, you've got yourself at this point now where, you know, there's so many players being developed. It's kind of self-fulfilling now at this point, isn't it?
Yeah, so we have been trying to keep everybody engaged. Like I said, during this lockdown, keeping people in touch. We've got the WhatsApp groups. I'm sure everybody, all your teams have. We've been doing Zoom sessions for fitness. Our coach has been putting videos on, talking about players that we want to practice, etc., etc. And I know throughout the junior section with Neil's lot, they've been doing exactly the same and keeping engaged. We are actually getting ready to go back, doing a little bit of outdoor activity in our little pockets of bubble under the RFL guidelines. So a few teams are getting back to that as and when. There's no pressure on anybody to come back, just to get a bit of fitness, really, and get back in touch with people.
And how much are you looking forward to that day, whenever it's safe to do so, when, you know, the club will be back playing rugby league again? How much are you looking forward to that?
I think it's safe to say we're all quite looking forward to that. When it'll be, we don't quite know. We're just keeping in touch with the RFL, following the guidelines. We're desperate to get back. We know the NCL's been scrapped this year. There is talk of doing a regionalised league. So what that means, we don't quite know at the moment. But yeah, we can't wait to get out there and have a dig. But that'll be when it'll be. I think the great good is everybody's safe and well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds like, you know, Ian, that the work that's been going on there with, you know, not just the club more generally, but also externally as well with the work with the East Riding Food Bank, all going in the right direction as a club, it looks like.
Yeah, we keep trying. You know, we're on a learning curve all the time. We're just trying different things, trying to be the best we can, and trying to grow the club. And we'll keep doing that for the foreseeable future.
Beverley Chairman Ian Pollard there joining us here on the Total Rugby League Show. And you can find out more about the Beverley Club by visiting their website. That's at beverleyarlfc.co.uk. Well, let's talk now about the NRL. And speaking of the NRL and Australia, let's go there now. Not actually. I'm not Judith Chalmers. But Alex, I'll come to you because Parramatta are leading the way after five matches, five wins from five. And they found the gears in their second half match last weekend to overcome Penrith.
Yeah, they're a good team, and I'll selflessly say that I did predict them to do well at the start of the season. Back when everything was normal, I said they'd come second, and they've proved me right so far. They've just got a really good all round team. Everybody works well, and the halfbacks are the key with Moses and Dylan Brown, a young. Young 5'8", young standoff, doing very well.
Fullback is a really great player as well.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And Reid Marnie, the hooker. Yeah. Not many people look at him, but he just does an insane amount of work.
Yeah.
So really, there aren't any weak links in that Parramatta side at all.
I think you're finding now with the new rules in Australia that the spine, you know, the 1, 6, 7, and 9, are probably even more important than they were before.
Mm.
You know, and you're finding that, you know, the teams with a good spine, with good players in those positions, will be the ones that will thrive under the new rules. And that's certainly true of Parramatta. But I think they've got quite a big game coming up this week, haven't they, Parramatta, if I remember right?
Yeah, they are playing Sydney Roosters. So that's one hell of a game to watch. It's Saturday morning, 10:35. So if you're around for that one, I'd definitely watch that one, because it's probably the two teams that have use those new rules to their advantage the best, particularly the Roosters. I think the speed they have around the ruck, I mean, they made the Bulldogs look really average. And to be honest,
the best player in the world at the moment, you think?
Yeah, it was all really very effortless. I think that's the key with Tedesco, is he makes everything look effortless.
Parramatta weren't the only ones to come from behind to snatch victory last week. Alex, poor Brisbane. Poor Brisbane.
Yeah. Yeah,
poor Brisbane.
Obviously, their latest result was a lot better than the Roosters' one the week before, which was 59-0. You always felt that Manly, even though they were 18-0 down, sort of had enough to win that game. You always sort of felt that they're going to come back at some point. They're going to come back, and they did. But Seibold may not have anything tangible to get out of that game, but he'll certainly be pleased with how his young players played. Because if you look at that Brisbane side, they've got a huge amount of young players in there. And when you do that, when you have young players in your team, it's really great to have them next to these experienced heads. But Brisbane don't really have that. Like the leader of their pack, if you sort of exclude Matt Lodge, is Payne Haas, a 20-year-old. They don't have that experience at all. And going into the season, they had co-captains of Patrick Carrigan and Brodie Croft, who between them have probably played less than 100 NRL games. So really, there's no experience within that side at all, unless you count Darius Boyd, Matt Lodge. Those are really the only experienced players in that team at all.
I thought Brisbane were very unlucky in that game, actually, Alex, because they could have easily gone 24-0 up when Darius
Boyd
had a second obstruction, which was pretty marginal, in my view. I mean, it's really interesting that one of the things about the NRL at the moment is that I think referees' decisions are making a real big impact on the game, because when they give six again, it really gives an impetus to clubs to, you know, very frequently score in the next set. And you're finding, or at least I'm finding when I watch it, that I find it difficult to distinguish between those tackles where they give six more tackles and those tackles where they don't. You know, they're not clearly defined in my view. And the only thing that you can also say in that regard is that they happen too quickly for the commentators to make a big thing about them.
Yeah, I think the commentators are sort of struggling to follow the game. It's so fast. And what they tend to do with these six-again calls is give them pretty early in sets. So you might only get an extra one or two tackles because you're only on tackle one or tackle two when they call them. But generally, the ones that they do call them on are ones where play can continue as if nothing's happened. Obviously, if the ball comes out or something like that, then you can't give a six again. Whereas if they lay on just slightly too long, that's when they tend to give the six again.
I mean, Matthew, what do you make of the... Because you mentioned the commentary teams there and that kind of thing. What do you make of the whole presentation of the NRL at the moment with no crowds? It's a tough sell, but with the noise being pumped in and the actual action overall, it seems to be working quite well, I think, from a broadcasting perspective.
Yeah, I think it's been great. I think they've done a real good job, the NRL. I watched about 10 minutes of a Bundesliga game, couldn't get into it. It just felt soulless. Like, yeah, it just didn't work for me. But the noise, you don't realise how much of a difference it makes, do you, really? It was superb.
I really love the cardboard cutouts they've got up. And it's a nice little money-making venture for them, but it's also just a brilliant bit of fun as well. And yeah, it fills the stadium. It looks like it's full. And I think it's a quality bit of stuff from the NRL. That, coupled with the crowd noise, is great.
Well, I think whoever thought up the crowd noise and whoever thought up the cardboard cutouts at $22 a throw, whoever that person is, if it's one person or two persons, I think they deserve a massive pay rise because, you know, I think both of them, as you say, have worked really well. The cardboard cutouts just look great fun, don't they? You know, there are quite a few people who have sent photographs of their dog in or whatever it might be, or of themselves wearing superhero type stuff. You know, it looks almost as much fun as actually having a crowd there, really, in a strange way. So, you know, I think again, it's just worked superbly. And I just hope they're getting the reward in terms of viewing figures on television over there, because I think they deserve it.
It was nice of Dominic Cummings to turn up at one of the matches as well.
It was, wasn't it?
Bit of satire there for everyone at home. Back to the rugby itself. Good displays last week as well from Canberra, Melbourne and South Sydney. But Alex, game of the week, would you say, was New Zealand against North Queensland? Not one for the defensive purists.
Of which I am definitely one. I'd much prefer a 2-2 game rather than the 37-26. Well, there were some good tries scored, but there was also some shoddy defending, and at times the tries were really scrappy. But it take nothing away from Hiku, who sort of Peter Hiku, the former Warrington player that bounced expertly back from a really, really bad blunder to score a hat trick.
Player of the week this week as well in League Express.
Yes, but I did think that Cody Nikorima was the best player. That tip on for the Adam Pompey try was just absolutely ridiculous. How he just, the offload came to him and he just battered it to the left and they scored from it. He's really struggled at the Warriors. He's not really ever performed to his potential, but I thought he did. He did.
I've been really impressed with the Warriors. Along with Parramatta, the team I've watched the most. And I think they look good. I think they're like a pretty good There's nothing spectacular about them, but I think they're a good team to watch. I think they're entertaining.
And they're a young team as well. There's not a lot of experience in there, so they hopefully they can get better. But the key is that they've got the experience and the halves with Nikarima and Blake Green.
It's funny calling Nikarima an experienced player, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, he's probably he's mid-20s, isn't he? But compared to some of the other players they've got around there, of course, Roger Tuivasa-Sheck is always important for them as well.
But they've got a big test this weekend against South Sydney, so I think that'll be a real marker for them of how far they've progressed.
That's an excellent battle of fullbacks, because Latrell Mitchell looks like he's really settled in to that spot.
He's looking a lot happier, isn't he, Latrell Mitchell? Just his body language looks better now.
He's one of those players that you just want on the ball as much as possible, and that's why he's playing at fullback rather than the centre, because he's just got so much skill, so much speed, so much power, so they just want him on the ball as much as possible.
Well, South Sydney against New Zealand taking place on Friday, Friday morning, that is. Penrith and Melbourne taking on each other as well on Friday morning. Newcastle against Brisbane, though, is the first game of the week on Thursday morning, Alex. Where are Brisbane Broncos at the moment? Do they need to be worried or anything like that, or is it just too early yet?
Well, the Brisbane media will come down on them like a ton of bricks if they don't get a win fairly soon, I think. But he keeps trying, Seibold, and he's getting closer. They've gone for another reshuffle by the looks of things. Herbie Farnworth, the Wigan lad, is moving into the centres. But we'll see how that goes, because Corey Oates are coming back onto the wing after he moved into the second row. So there's a whole load of chopping and changing going on. But the Knights have looked pretty good this season as well. They got their first defeat, I think it was, against Melbourne. So I think it'll be a tough test against the Knights for the Broncos.
One of the things that struck me about the NRL this year, and the Knights are a perfect example, is how there are so many young players who you've perhaps not heard of before this season who are coming through and making a massive impact. And I'm thinking in particular of that young kid, Bradman Best, at the Knights, who's only 18, but he's got the body of a 28-year-old.
He reminds me of, I saw a video earlier on of Wayne Rooney at the Euro 2004 when he was 18. And Bradman Best reminds me very much of Wayne Rooney in terms of how he looks as well as his age, and how he's just, he's a big bloke, but he's kind of a skinhead, and it looks like he's about 30. But he's certainly doing some good stuff in the centres for Newcastle.
Do you know what winds me up, though? And it comes back to a larger issue and sort of dragging it back to Super League. So Bradman Best played for the Aussie Schoolboys in 2018. He was in that team that took on the England Academy. And he was playing on the... He was playing left centre, left centre,
right centre. That's where it tends to play these days.
I'm pretty sure it was left centre. And I can't remember who the centre was for England that day. But I think it was Newman, but I might be wrong. But a lot were made of Bradman Best on the day. Headingley, I went to that game, which was the second test. And the more I think about it, the more I think it was Newman. He had him in his pocket all day. England won the series 2-0. And I think we don't give any credit whatsoever to the current crop of young English players that are coming through. No. If you look at this, look at that team and look at where they're at now, we got an unbelievable set of youngsters coming through. And a bit of a teaser, I'm told one of them has actually signed for an NRL club last week, Hawaii League Express on Monday. But we got so many class players, you know, Wellesby, Newman's a freak, Harry Smith, Morgan Smithies, the list goes on and on. I've missed a load there. We got to give more credit to our guys that we got in Super League that are coming through. Not to take anything away from Bradman Best, because clearly, you know, he's a superstar in the making. I think we've got a lot of career as well, to be honest.
I think you're right. I mean, but one guy who's just gone over to the NRL who's making a massive impact, of course, is George Williams, who I think has been outstanding for Canberra since the game resumed. And I mean, we always used to say he had the best short kicking game in Super League, and I think he's now got the best short kicking game in the NRL. You know, he's winning repeat sets consistently with Canberra. He's putting in those high kicks, you know, bombs to his wingers and creating tries there. Absolutely, he's been absolutely outstanding so far, and he actually partners a player who is just as good as he is in Jack Whiten, who I think is a potentially an Australian standoff in the World Cup next year. So, you know, I think Canberra have been really great to watch this year so far, and they play Manly on Sunday, don't they, Alex? So that's that's really going to be a game to look forward to, I think.
I agree with you on Williams. I've always been a bit of a critic of Williams in that I've always felt he was a bit of a one-trick pony with that short kicking game, which was undoubtedly, for years and years, the best in Super League. But I felt that's all he really had to his game. But I felt he improved last year. I thought he had more of a running threat. I thought his distribution got better as well. And, I mean, the way that he's gone over there with a lot of sceptics. And let's face it, it wasn't... We love to tell the tale about the Aussies write off everyone who goes over there from England. But I don't think everyone over here was convinced that George Williams would do it over there. Is it too early to say he's done it? Yeah, it is. But so far, he's proven a lot of people wrong, not only in Australia, but over here too.
It's because the scepticism is because of the success of English forwards, not necessarily the... We've not seen an English back go over there for quite some time and actually make it. You know, you've got Callum Watkins that's come back, Dan Sargeant that's gone and come back. Farnworth's kind of a different kettle of fish, isn't he? Because he was a young lad. He was never really involved in any particular professional clubs in this country. He was a Wigan St. Pat's youngster and then went to Brisbane pretty early on in his career. But we've not seen backs go over there for quite some time and make it. So, but Williams is certainly the best start we've seen in a long time, and I think certainly clubs will now be well aware of what he is all about.
Well, as we've touched upon here, loads of matches this weekend in the NRL, all of them on Sky, which is nice. One after another, it's good stuff. I think we touched upon the game of the weekend already. Sydney against Parramatta, I think, stands out by a country mile. We should say when we're finishing off this NRL bit, congratulations to St George as well, who picked up their first win of the season. They've got a Clash of the Titans on Saturday, but they're playing the Gold Coast Titans. Yeah, loads of good stuff this weekend. And Matthew, just before we draw a line under the show this week, you touched upon, you know, some of the transfers and that kind of thing. It's still going on in League Express on Monday and on TotalRL.com. Loads of transfer rumours, loads of speculation, loads of actual transfers as well.
It started quiet. It's just starting to pick up now. There's more NRL players being offered. I think a lot of players at clubs who are off contract have been holding off, waiting to see what's coming about. I think a lot of them are getting to a point where they're ready to make a call. So I would predict in the next 3 weeks or so, it will explode into life. We've already seen a few, as I said. I mean, Saints haven't officially announced it, but it's within a couple of days become the world's worst kept secret that Joel Thompson's on his way to St. Helens. There are others that want to come over as well. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how certain clubs move and also where certain players move, because there's some fairly prominent players that are getting ready to move clubs.
There's been quite a lot of movement in the NRL with Bryson Goodwin and Nene McDonald are both signed for Cronulla. And then you've got Isaac Luke, who's gone to Brisbane.
Corey Thompson signed
for the Gold Coast for 3 years. And that's a fully deserved 3-year deal for him. He's been sensational. So there is going to be movement, isn't there, with NRL clubs shaking around with the players.
I've been a little bit surprised by the reaction of St. Helens fans to Joel Thompson. When I looked into it, I spoke to you as well. I sounded you off about it. And the more I looked at it, the more I thought it was a very good signing. You know, this is a guy that I think people see 31-year-old Australian, and there is that stigma. I'm not one to say that the stigma's rubbish, because he's been proven time and time again. However, this is a guy that, since joining Manly at the start of 2018, has only missed 4 games. Mm. He's played every minute of every game so far this season. And everyone who watches him and everyone associated with Manly, since it's sort of been leaked, hasn't had a bad word to say about the bloke. So it seems to me like it's a good sign.
The issue with Joel for Joel Thompson is he's kind of swallowed up by the Trbojevic stuff, Joel and Tom. And then you've got Daly Cherry-Evans there as well. But Joel Thompson and Curtis Sirenin are probably the two most outstanding second rowers in the NRL as a combination. Those two are brilliant. And I think Thompson will be a huge success in Super League when he comes over.
Well, like we said, TotalRL.com, the place to go to for On The Pulse, breaking rugby league news. But Monday's paper, as it's been now every single Monday since lockdown, Martin, filled with lots of stuff next week.
Absolutely, including full coverage of the NRL, of course, you know, for people who have enjoyed our discussion about the NRL today. But news from every single professional club in the United Kingdom and France and Canada, for that matter, of course. So, you know, you're going to have loads and loads of coverage of the game, and we're just building up to August when the European game returns to action. So a lot to look forward to, Ben.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. Well, it's been great having you all back together in podcast form. Should say, Matthew, your show, Backchat's been carrying on regardless as well. Is that going to be out this week as well?
So we've got a documentary on this week, and then we're back to it, I believe, next week. I'm kind of just told what to do. I'm still waiting to be told what we're doing next Monday. I'll be well.
If anything, Matthew, it's just because, you know, things can slide given the circumstances. It's just encouraging you to keep your kitchen clean. That's, I think, that if anything, that's a positive.
Fed up of talking about the kitchen. Told them so many times, please stop bringing up the kitchen.
Oh, okay, that's the last time.
Bringing up the kitchen.
That's the first time I've mentioned it and the last. And Alex, just before we go, which game are you most looking forward to this weekend?
Well, definitely Roosters and Eels. That's the standout. That's definitely the standout. But the Raiders and the Seagulls will be interesting.
All those match reports, as Martin rightly said, available in League Express on Monday. But that's it for this week's Total Rugby League Show. A big thank you to Alex Davies for joining us in his Sheffield Wednesday top. Big thank you to Matthew Shaw, not in his kitchen. And a big thank you too, as always, to Marty Sadler. And wherever you're going this weekend, make sure that you stay safe and have fun. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.